This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. Prior to the recession, it seemed everyone was invested in the market. Some did so because it was the thing to do. It was almost like a competition to see if you could best your neighbors or coworkers with your latest stock-picking success story. But all of that came crashing down as the economy collapsed into the Great Recession. You may have noticed that those electronic trading commercials have begun to resurface on TV after a long absence. That's because skittish investors have begun to be lured back into the market as it soars to record highs. In fact, those who have been out of the market since the beginning of the recession have missed significant gains. They may have gotten out of the market years ago to stem significant losses, or because they, in fact, lost money that will never be recovered, and in the process lost their appetite for investing in stocks. Still, in this age, you almost have to be invested if you want to have the hope of a comfortable retirement. So what is a prudent investor to do? How should you invest? In what should you invest? How much risk should you take? Indeed, what is the prudent approach to investing, and has it changed since the early 2000s? Further, how should you regard the market if you're 20 or 50 or 65? We take a fresh look at an old friend investing with two people who have been at this as financial planners and advisors for a considerable amount of time. Larry Carroll is president and CEO of Carroll Financial Associates, the company that bears his name. I remember I used to say that, didn't I? A company he founded in 1980 with what he calls a simple approach. The best interest of the client is the only interest that matters. Good morning. Welcome back.
Mike, thanks for having me.
Bill Staton is chairman of Staton Financial Advisors, an MBA in finance from the Wharton School. He's written a number of books on how to invest and calls himself America's Money Coach. Do you call yourself that, or do other people call you America's?
No, I was introduced that way as on a financial show some 20 years ago, Mike, okay. And I trademarked it. I liked it.
Smart.
He requires me to call him that.
No, I require Larry to call me sir.
Okay, well, we learned as a result of the financial collapse that markets don't always go up. They do come down. And we also learned what Alan Greenspan was referring to when he referred to the irrational exuberance that the earlier market was experiencing. And today, we see the market fall on good news and rise on bad. We've also witnessed the market soar to record highs despite high unemployment, perhaps because of high unemployment, and the economy in which a lot of ordinary people are finding it hard to make ends meet. The stock market is going up and up and up. Who should be investing in this market?
Well, the biggest problem that most Americans face, Mike, is the threat of outliving their money, just pure and simple. Larry and I were talking about it before the show. There's all this talk about $17 trillion current deficit. We have $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities, and people don't like what's going on in Washington, et cetera. But that's a distraction. That has nothing to do with his or her personal finances. And people generally in America do not save enough, and they don't put their money into high-quality investments. Like, we trademarked the term world-class dividend growers like McDonald's and IBM, companies like that that can hang on and do quite well in bad times like 2007, 8, and 9 and thrive and make a lot of money in better times.
Except a lot of people were invested in things that looked solid like Bank of America and General Motors, and we saw what happened to them and other bank stocks.
It obviously makes a case for diversification. Mm-hmm. But kind of going back to Bill's point, if you look at a chart of the market – over 100 years, the Great Recession, the Great Depression, the 73-74 downturn, the bubble, it always goes up and to the right over time. Mm-hmm. And we get too distracted by what it does this month or this year. You know, if you look at the last 50, maybe 60 years at this point, at every point in time, every year, individual calendar year, the market has averaged moving down at some point during the year 14.7% drawdown from top to bottom, mm-hmm. average every year. It's part of investing. It's why you get paid the higher, longer-term returns is that you have to put up with that volatility.
But if you're 20, volatility can be sloughed off because you've got 40 years or more to if you're putting money into a retirement fund, you've got 40 years or more to make up for whatever may happen negatively in the market. If you're 50 or 55 or 65 or worse, 70 and already retired and you're living off that money, that's another thing, isn't it?
Well, not necessarily, Mike, because first of all, let's say you're 75. And Larry and I manage money for people like that who are retired and live off the funds that we manage. Well, first of all, in a bad year like 2008, they're not taking all of their money out at once. Maybe they've got a 20-year longevity. So they're 75, they'll live to 95, and they've got enough money to carry them through if they don't, you know, spend too much. So you can't think of I think of it as airplane turbulence. There is no record of turbulence destroying an airplane because airplanes are built for turbulence. And normally a pilot will do anything to avoid the turbulence, not because he or she is worried the plane's going to break apart, but because the passengers get so uncomfortable with it. Turbulence doesn't destroy airplanes. Volatility is not a risk factor. The risk factor is the stuff that you own going down the tubes. When Bank of America cut their dividend from $2.56 to $1.28, it wasn't long before they went to 4 cents. And you know what happened? It went from 55 to 3. The dividend dropped as a support.
You have to have, particularly when you're older and when you're retired and living off your assets, you have to have in place a plan of how are you going to deal with the 14.7% average drawdown in a market each year. How am I going to get through those volatile times so that I can take advantage of the longer-term higher returns from the market? It could be by having higher cash reserves. It could be by having things in the account that may not go down. It could be by being in a position where you could cut your discretionary spending. But you have to have a plan to how you're going to deal with that because it's going to happen. And the idea of knee-jerk reactions of I've got to get out and then how am I going to figure out how to get back in is not a plan.
You can't time the market.
Hope is not a plan.
You wrote something in your company's newsletter, Larry, recently that was picked up by the Charlotte Business Journal, in which you call the record-setting market and stocks that are getting increasingly expensive as the first signs of the greed cycle. What is that?
Well, you know, individual investors tend to cycle back and forth between fear and greed. When the market's going down, they're motivated by fear. When it is going up nicely, kind of greed takes over and they want full participation in the upside. I don't think we're at the greed part of the cycle yet because there's still a lot of people on the sidelines and a lot of people who are still scared of this market. But we're starting to see a few more signs of the greed factor. And where we see it is the person that, you know, the market's up 29% year to date. It's the conservative 75-year-old retired person that has a balanced account and is up 12 or 14 that calls and wants to know why he's not up more. And it's the same person who was so fearful 5 years ago.
That would be me, by the way.
Well, yeah. You're not by yourself in that. So a big job, a big part of our job and Bill's job is managing this fear and greed cycle and getting through it over time.
It's mental management. That's really what it is. In response to tag on to what Larry said, it used to be everywhere I would go, and probably the same thing is true for Larry, Harris Teeter, coffee shop or whatever, or party. One or two people at least would come up, well, Bill, what do you think about the market? What do you think about this? What do you like? I can tell you for a fact that since 2008 and 2009, one person who's not a client or prospect has asked me that question. One person, and it wasn't until about 2 months ago. So we've been this whole big upcycle in the market, and people are now just beginning to think about
yeah,
it again.
I referred to that in the opening. It used to be that you could not go to a gathering of people and not talk about the stock market. I haven't heard anybody talk about it for years now. And I don't know whether that means they're out of it or they just don't talk about it because it's they lost their shirt.
What I see is the people that bring it up now are the ones who have been out.
Mm-hmm.
They know they've made a mistake. They're trying to figure out how in the world you get in after it doubled.
But you said when you wrote about the greed cycle that you compared what is happening right now today to what happened in 1996. What happened in 1996?
Yeah. If you look at I think most market people would tell you that this market is fairly valued now. The second half of 1996, the market was fairly valued, about where it's valued at now. From there through to 2000, the first of 2000, the market doubled from there. So, and I'm not saying that the market doubles from here. What I'm saying is you can't approach markets as all or nothing decisions, as I'm going to be all in or I'm going to be all out. It just doesn't work over time. Nobody's good enough at predicting markets to take that approach. You need to have some money in there at pretty much all points in time. And you need to have some reserves at all points in time.
I want to talk about your philosophies here because I understand, Bill, that your approach to all of this, you don't pay much attention to the idea of chasing record highs up a ladder. You don't have a market outlook, in fact, you say.
Essentially, that's true. I can tell you what I think, but we don't base our investment decisions for clients on what Bill Staten thinks or Larry thinks or anybody else thinks. It's like if you ask Warren Buffett what his outlook is for the next 6 to 12 months, he will tell you flat out, we don't have a market outlook, we've never had a market outlook, and we never will have a market outlook. We're looking for solid value. Larry does that, and they do that for their clients. We do that for our clients. And there are always values, and there are always opportunities.
Isn't that how all mutual fund managers work, too, or am I completely off base?
Well, most mutual funds, if you're – most index funds in general have outperformed most mutual fund managers who tend to be more active buying and selling and trading and doing all that stuff, which we both consider to be fluff.
I would think that you guys are dealing with big money. I mean, I think your clients are people who have invested well over the years, or have had high salaries over the years, and who have money to invest. A lot of people listening to this program don't have a lot of money, and they're putting what they can afford to put into a 401k, perhaps, or their children's college funds, or whatever it may be, and just want to make sure that that money grows and is safe over time, and that they'll have enough to live on in retirement. They're not greedy. They're not looking to become millionaires or billionaires. They just want to be able to live. Are they going to get the kind of service, are they going to get the kind of guidance, I guess, that will help them build that unless they find somebody with an approach that doesn't chase the market?
Well, we were on your show, Mary and I were, when we came out with a $50 a month millionaire a couple of years ago. We show people how to invest directly into companies like McDonald's, IBM, Procter & Gamble, and they don't need a broker. So it's easy to get started with $100 or $200 at the time. And the second thing is, again, Mike, if a person, whatever they put their money into, real estate, art, antiques, I notice you've got Romare Bearden. This would be an example back of the poster.
It's only a print.
You want to only own high quality, number one. Mm-hmm. You want to try to pay a fair price. And number three, you want to be patient to give your investment time to work out. Most people have common sense that's good, but they leave the common sense behind.
I'm going to come back to that question. We have to take a break because I don't think I got an answer to it. And that can you find somebody who will guide you in a way that is not chasing the latest stock market craze? We're coming right back. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and World Vision, striving to bring lasting change to children in need through education, health, nutrition, clean water, and economic development. World Vision believes in children. More at worldvision.org. And the Gay Men's Chorus of Charlotte, a magical exploration of Broadway's holiday songs to help keep the Yuletide gay. St. Martin's Episcopal Church, Friday and Saturday evening, and the matinee show, tickets at gmccharlotte.org. Eight East Coast states have petitioned the Environmental Protection Agency to impose tougher air pollution standards on the coal-producing Midwest. The Supreme Court will hear arguments on air quality mandates, and Diane Rehm and her guests will talk about the battle over cross-state air pollution coming up in 20 minutes at 10 on The Diane Rehm Show. We're coming back with more with Larry Carroll and Bill Staten about your money in just a moment.
In 2013, WFAE brought you the news you count on more than ever, and we are committed to doing the same in 2014 with your help. That support can come in many forms, including a donation of stock or a used vehicle. To make your gift or learn more, please call us at 704-549-9000 or visit us online at WFAE.org.
It's Charlotte Talks on Listener Funded, 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Larry Carroll is with us, President and CEO of Carroll Financial Associates, Bill Staten, Chairman of the Staten Financial Advisors, and we're talking about the market and how to react to it today. Should you be in it? How do you mitigate risk? And we'll eventually talk about investing at various stages of life, because I think that's important. And I asked a question prior to the break about where you go if you're the average investor who doesn't have $1 million or more to put into the market or to put into the hands of a personal advisor. How do you get good advice?
Well, I'll say a couple things, Mike. One is that if you look at the primary savings vehicle for these people being the 401k, and I agree with you there, the 401k providers are providing more and more advice to the participants and providing model portfolios and rebalancing portfolios. So if they'll dig a little bit.
But are they steering you toward things that they're going to make that are better for them to sell you than you for you to buy?
No.
Okay.
They're fiduciaries under ERISA. They've got huge liability if they were trying to take care of themselves in that process. The second thing about the 401k process, and I know this is difficult for the average person, but they're better off when markets go down. They don't think that way, but if you're making a regular contribution to a 401k, if prices are down, you're buying more. Of McDonald's or Walmart or whatever it is.
It's on sale.
Right. It's on sale. So it's just like thinking about you buy a hamburger every day. If the price goes down for you, that's a good thing. If you're buying Walmart every day and the price goes down, that's a good thing. It is a good thing until the point that you retire and need to turn this into an income. So the perfect situation is you wish the market went down every day until the day you retired, and then it goes straight up
right
from that point on. Now, it's not going to work out exactly that way, but I'm amazed at the people that think in terms of getting out of the market, particularly when it's down, in their 401k, and don't recognize the benefits of that regular contribution over long periods of time.
Yeah, and not to mention, Mike, that so many of these plans offer free money. You put in 3% of your pre-tax income, and they match it dollar for dollar. So automatically, you just did three things. Number one, you reduced your taxable income. Number two, you put some money to work for your financial future. And number three, you doubled your money. You doubled your money. People say, well, what if I put in 3%? My company puts in 3% and the market goes down 50%. Okay, you lost the 3% that the company put in. You still got the 3%. And people are passing up, millions and millions of Americans are passing up free money. And it's hard to believe it, but it's true.
All right, let's talk about that for a second, because people, you're exactly right. People will steer away from this in down markets and because of what just happened over the last several years. I've had many financial people tell me that if your company will match your IRA or your retirement contribution, you must do it.
You must.
And you must do it to the maximum that you can get that matching fund.
We both believe that very strongly.
Yep.
So when you see in the bad times, in the last 5 years, when you were putting money into that fund and your company was matching that fund, and every month you'd get your statement and it was down, even though you were putting new money in, it was down further than before. You're still saying that was a good thing.
You need to be happy about that. I know it's tough. But again, if you look at this long-term map of the market, it always moves up and to the left. You're going to go through these downturns, but you always come out of them. Bill and I were talking before we came in here about a quote that we both have used over time. There has never been a point in time where the correct position was to be negative on the future of the American economy. Never. And I don't think today is going to disprove that.
So when the market was collapsing and the economy was collapsing in 2008, what were you telling your clients to do?
Well, I was telling our clients that, number one, they own companies like Walmart, which happened to be up in 2008, and that the companies weren't going to go bankrupt, number two. Number three, they were going to keep raising the dividends, which they did. And number four, as Larry has said twice already, the values became more and more compelling. And a lot of our clients, both of them, had plenty of cash on the sidelines, so it wasn't like they couldn't buy more. But we have to practice very skillful mental management to keep people on the right path to say, okay, we've had a down year, but the opportunity is even better than it was 12 months earlier.
Well, it works in reverse, too, because the market is now soaring. It, as you say, it's up 29% on the year, and a lot of people who have been on the sidelines might think to themselves, man, I got to get back in, and I got to get back in big. But markets that go up sometimes come down, and a lot of the market success right now, it seems to me, some people are saying, is due to the Fed and their stimulus that they're providing the economy. At some point in time, they're going to remove that stimulus, and just the threat of the removal of that stimulus caused the market to take some pretty deep dips recently. So what are you saying to people who are not in, who ought to get in, or who might think about getting in? Should they get in? How big should they get in? Where should they put their money?
The dip that you refer to
was
6%.
Okay.
That's not very big. But that was the reaction you got to the taper news. They will taper when they see significant signs that the economy is better. Now, two other comments.
And won't the market go, ooh, we don't like that very much?
Not if the economy continues to make slow progress. They may have a 1 or 2 day reaction, but I think you got to come back to this market is selling at approximately 16 times earnings, 15 to 16 times earnings, which is the long-term average P.E. multiple on the market. So it's not a market bubble from a valuation perspective. If you want to talk about market bubbles, and a lot of people do with the same rationale you just mentioned about the stock market, the bubble is the bond market, where the Fed has driven those rates down to unrealistically low rates. And a lot of people understand the ups and downs of the stock market. I find people never understand losing money in the bond market.
A lot of people don't think they can lose money in bonds.
And it's going to happen.
Yeah. From 1941 to 1981, interest rates went up relentlessly. If you had a $100,000 portfolio bonds in 1941, Mike, by the time we got to 1981, record high interest rates, taking inflation into account, your $100,000 was worth $30,000. You lost 70% of your purchasing power. Stocks did about 11% a year during that period. Now, since 81 into 2013, we've had 32 years of a record decline in interest rates. Well, how much lower are they going to go? When your mattress is on the floor and you roll off, you've got about 4 inches to go, you know, and that's about where we are. And people, and give you a simple example, if you're on Social Security, you're going to get a whopping 1.5% increase next year. You tell me whose cost of living isn't going up more than 1.5%. We've already seen what's happened to medical premiums. Even if you retain your same policies you had last year with Blue Cross Blue Shield, you're going to get a whopping increase in 2014 in the premium. College tuitions are going up, et cetera.
So are you saying don't buy bonds? Is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm saying that a couple of things. You've got to really be careful about the risk in the bond market and recognize them. You can manage them, but it's there, and people do not tend to relate to the risk that's there. The second thing, and this is coming back to your point about Federal Reserve policy, what this policy is doing, and you have to recognize this, it is punishing conservative savers because you can't keep up with inflation in the money market fund, in CDs, in the safe bond
right.
part of the market. Mm-hmm. They're telling you and have been telling you for 5 years, if you want investment returns, you've got to go to the stock side of the house.
So let's talk about stages of investing, stages of life. You're just starting out. You got your first, maybe your second job. You're trying to build a life. You're buying cars. You're buying furniture. Maybe you're buying a house or certainly renting an apartment or a first home. What should you be considering when it comes to money and investing?
Well, you always have to focus on not wasting money. I mean, everybody wastes money. I have asked this question to thousands of people, thousands. Well, Mary and I teach at our county jail. We teach basic financial skills. I always ask the inmates, but I've asked teenagers. In all the years I've asked this question, Mike, I've had one person say yes, and that is, can you honestly raise your hand and tell me you don't waste at least $50 a month? I had a 14-year-old say, I've never seen $50 in a month. And that's the only person I've ever seen out of thousands of people. So that's $600 a year, yes. Wasted money. And it's crack money. It slips between the cracks, mm-hmm. and you don't have any idea where it went. And if anybody keeps a budget, typically the biggest item in the budget is principal and interest for the mortgage or the rent. The second item is miscellaneous, meaning I have $10,000 of miscellaneous a year, but I have no idea what it is.
If you're going to Starbucks every day and buying two cups of coffee, yeah. that's a lot of money over time, right?
I make my own Absolutely. Cappuccinos now, and I've saved about $6 a day.
The most important thing that you can learn early in life is, it sounds so simple, your inflows need to be greater than your outflows. If you'll simply save 10%, hopefully in your 401k and getting some matching to go with that, and avoid excessive debt in your personal situation, you'll be just fine over time.
But it's hard. I think it's harder today than it maybe was in the 50s, because today you have to have a computer. You got to have a smartphone. You got to have an internet connection.
Wait a minute. I have a dumb phone.
Do you?
I sure do. I keep it in my car so I don't have to deal with it.
What is wrong with you, man? But it's hard not to keep up with, and technology is expensive. Right?
Absolutely. You know, you may have heard me say this before. I think one of our problems is, and there are demographic reasons for this, but when a child comes out of college today, there's two problems, I think. One is the group who are coming out with a non-technical degree, sociology, European Romance languages, whatever. I have no problem with those degrees. But if you come out with that degree and $70,000 worth of student debt, you got a problem, because you're not going to be able to transition into a job that's going to be able to service that. The second part is, when that person comes out of college today, they want the same lifestyle that they had living with their parents, with the TVs and the technology and the nice accommodations mm-hmm. and all that. And they forget where their parents were when they were 22. They were living much more modestly at that point, people compared to where they were at 18.
And their parents lived through the richest period in human history, not likely to be repeated next generation, correct?
Correct.
So when I would guess when you're young, having a budget and sticking to it is even more important than when you're older, but it's important through life. And is that where you begin for a young person getting out of college, trying to build a life, working toward investing, build the budget first?
Here's what you need to know. Remember Tommy Tomlinson wrote great columns for the Charlotte Observer. Mm-hmm. He went to a second grade here in Charlotte, I think back in March, and asked these second graders what they would do if they were president. How would they make the country better? And this one kid, now remember these are 7 and 8 year olds, he said, it's very simple. Your needs are your needs. Your wants are your wants. You need your needs, but you don't need your wants. You have to know the difference. That's it. That's it. Your needs are your needs. Your wants are your wants. You need your needs. You don't need your wants. You have to know the difference.
I don't think you can turn non-budgeters into budgeters. I think people are wired to either be budget-oriented or not. Mm-hmm. So I get away from this idea of you've got to budget out every line item. But you need to focus on the big picture, which is you need to have more money coming in than going out. It's not about exactly what line item you spend it on. It's what the totals are.
So if you do that budget and you realize, you know, if I don't buy a cup of coffee every day, or if I bag my lunch and don't go out to lunch and spend $10 or $15 on lunch every day, I can save maybe $50 a month, $50 a week, whatever it may be. The number is irrelevant. And that money is what I'm going to put away. Mm-hmm. Where do you put small amounts of money?
First and foremost, the 401k.
Okay.
Through your employer, if that's
available. Or an IRA.
Or an IRA if your employer does not provide. Then you go to...
And why does it have to be an IRA? Why can't you just stick it in an investment fund? Why is the IRA aspect of the investment fund special?
One, you get to put it in before tax. You get to deduct on your tax return the money going into the IRA. Mm-hmm. So you're really getting paid to put it in there rather than putting it into the bank.
And it grows tax deferred.
Grows tax deferred. And secondly, it's a little bit out of reach. You can't just write a check and spend it easily. Because of the penalties and because it's not in your checkbook.
When you put something, if you only have a limited amount of cash and you're just starting out and you put something away in a 401k or an IRA, where can it go where it can earn some money? Do you put it in CDs? Do you put it in money markets?
Let me give you a simple example. All four of our children, we started direct investing when they were young, and our two grandsons the same way. Our daughter invested in McDonald's on her own in 1994. That original investment in a direct investment, a dividend reinvestment plan, Mike, has multiplied 100 times, not counting any money that's been added. The original less than $100 is worth more than $6,000 today just in McDonald's. And McDonald's continues to reinvest the dividends. And Walmart, we've got our two grandsons, in Walmart, PepsiCo, and McDonald's. If those companies go out of business, then by God, we've got worse problems than those companies going out of business and the stock market collapsing. But they're not going to.
That's what we said about General Motors.
Say that. And Larry didn't say that either.
So if you're young and you have kids, how do you save for your own retirement and invest in your children and your children's college
education?
Well, again,
as we both have stressed, every dollar you put in this year toward your financial future is a cheaper dollar than if you have to wait till next year. In other words, let's say you've got a son that's 18 years old, and he buys some shares of IBM, direct investment. Okay, mm-hmm. If his $20 a month will get him to the same place at age 65 as a 45-year-old who has to put aside $4,400 a month. Think about that, $20 a month if you start at 18, $4,400 a month when you're 45. Who has $4,400 a month?
That's Bill Staton, chairman of Staton Financial Advisors. Larry Carroll's with us. He's the president and CEO of Carroll Financial Associates. We will come back and we'll talk about later stages in life and what you should be doing in your 30s, your 40s, your 50s, and in retirement. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Alpine Ski Center. Charlotte, with performance winter clothing from North Face, Spyder, Roxy, Burton, and Arc'teryx. Winter sports gear and complete rental repair service open daily through Christmas in Greenville and Banner Elk. And McAdams, a firm that focuses on design, civil engineering, and land planning. McAdams welcomes David Malcolm, Director of Design. McAdams designing tomorrow's infrastructure and communities. McAdamsco.com. Well, there's a music education movement that's has its home in Greensboro, and it's called Kinder Music. It focuses on involving children from infants to seven in playing, not performing, but playing music. We'll find out about them and hear from a professional music maker making a reappearance in Charlotte after a 22-year absence, all tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, 8 East Coast states have petitioned the EPA to impose tougher air pollution standards on the coal-producing Midwest. And the Supreme Court hears arguments on air quality mandates, the battle over cross-state air pollution.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE.
It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Bill Staton is with us, Chairman of State and Financial Advisors. Larry Carroll, President and CEO of Carroll Financial Associates. And we are going to go through the stages of investing at certain ages. But you have an article about this on your website.
We did four articles about four different stages. Basically, young and starting out, young family in the 40s, then approaching retirement, and when you're retired, and looked at the things to be concerned about at these different stages. And it not only focuses on the investment side, but things like adequate insurance, estate plan as you get older, having a will in place to take care of the kids. But it kind of outlines some of these issues at the four different stages.
And that's how do you get to that?
The website is just carrollfinancial.com. Hit the button that says Investor Communications, and you can find it under there.
And Carol is C-A-R-R-O-L-L, by the way. I have an email here, which I'll get to before I go into the 30s and 40s. Van Goat is what he calls himself, and he says, I have a few penny stocks. Has anyone ever gotten rich off of a penny stock?
I've never met anybody who has, but maybe Larry's seen somebody.
No, I haven't.
I think they're penny stocks for a reason. They used to be $1, $10, $100 stocks.
Probably, that kind of goes into the entertainment part of the budget as opposed to the retirement planning part.
Put your headphones on for just a second because I'll take this call from Tom in York, South Carolina. Tom, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. I'd like to ask the gentleman, how are people supposed to protect themselves against business leaders who are acting fraudulently and deceptively like the banks and Wall Street were doing, or if you work for a state like Wisconsin where the government is trying to get rid of all the contracts and union contracts, or a place like today, we just read about Detroit, you find out that your employer, or if it's the state or anybody else, is not contributing what their contractual agreements are to your pension. And then, surprise, we're going to go declare bankruptcy, and you're out of luck, guys.
Well, it's a horrible situation, and a lot of people have been horribly hurt by this, some of which they really didn't have any control over. But I think we get asked this question a lot, and I'm sure Larry does too with new clients. How do you protect us, or how are we protected against a Bernie Madoff situation? Well, the simple answer to that is if you're dealing with a money manager such as ourselves, we don't actually have custody of your money. It would be at a place like Charles Schwab or TD Waterhouse or someplace like that where your money is segregated and we don't have any control over it to put money into it or take money out of it. So from the investing side, you can certainly protect yourself like that. Don't do business with anyone who says, oh, well, I've got a custodial firm here, and I'll hold your money, and then I'll make recommendations.
You have to have an independent custodian.
You sure do.
But when you've got people who have fiduciary responsibility who don't live up to it, who are making bad decisions that they know are bad, and they still haven't gone to jail, by the way. None of these people.
That's true.
How do you protect yourself from that? Because you can't know what's going on in the boardrooms and behind the scenes in these executive offices. You can't know.
Well, the clue that we've always had as far as investing for our clients is that dividend, number one, is sacred because it's the only number a company cannot lie about. That dividend has to go up every single year. And I'll give you a simple example. When Bank of America made the famous thing, they're going to buy Merrill Lynch, and the stock had drifted down from 55 to 39. By the way, a stock never drifts up. It always drifts down. It had gone from 55 to 39, and I read in the Financial Times, they said to Ken Lewis, how are you going to pay for Merrill Lynch? And he said, quote, all options are on the table, unquote. That CEO speak for the dividends out of here. We sold every share we had at 39 around that area, cut the dividend in half the next week. So at least the dividend from an investment standpoint, everybody can keep an eye on. Is that thing going up every year?
Right. And you need to pay attention to the idea of, are they earning the dividend?
Exactly.
Or just giving you your capital back. But if they're paying the dividend, earning the dividend, and increasing the dividend, it's a pretty good sign. I think one of the great points here that I'm sure Bill agrees with is more money has been lost by not paying attention to the quality of the investments than has ever been lost in the ups and downs.
And how do you determine that?
It's tough. I mean, certainly there are ratings, but you know, it's the big known names. It's the things you relate to. You know, if Home Depot's got a problem, you're probably going to know it. That doesn't mean the value of the stock can't go down, but you know they're still there and they're still selling paint.
You're talking about stocks. You talk about stocks a lot. Yeah. A lot of people, most people, I will bet you, have money in mutual funds. And I have heard good things about mutual funds and I've heard bad things about mutual funds. And the bad things that I've heard are the fees involved in mutual funds and how the fact you can't get out at any time in the day. You can only – it's only priced once a day. And if you see the stock market falling precipitously at 11 o'clock and you can't get out till 5 or 6 because all your money's tied up in a mutual fund, you're in trouble, aren't
There's
you?
No way you should be making investment decisions intraday.
Okay.
And be in a position where it's important that you can get out at 11 o'clock versus 4 o'clock. This is a long-term game. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. If that were important to you, you can do it with ETFs. They trade all the time. You can get out at 11 o'clock. But that should not be of great importance in your investment plan.
Okay. Yeah, and in your 401ks and their equivalents, Mike, you almost always only have a choice of mutual funds. So those are the ones you have to go with. We prefer individual securities because I can tell you what the financial strength is of a Coca-Cola. But I can't tell you at any given time, number one, what a fund owns, number two, what the overall financial strength is, and I think as importantly, do the people running the fund have any of their own money in it? It's at least 50-50 chance they have none of their own money invested in the own funds that they're running.
Although Morningstar will tell you whether they've got their own money in now. That's okay. Something fairly new from them.
Okay, let's move on to your 30s and 40s. You find yourself in your late 30s, early 40s. Hopefully you've already started a retirement account. If you haven't, is it too late? And if you have, what now? What kinds of investments should you be considering? How conservative or aggressive should
it's
you
almost
be?
Never too late unless you're on your deathbed. Because, again, longevity in this country and around the world is going up. We know the cost of living is not going down. Medical expenses, we've already seen through Obamacare and previous years, you know, what's happening there. And I think the big danger is a lot of people, regardless of their age, there's just been this old axiom, as you get older, you need more of your money in bonds. Well, that may be true, but if you've got a lot of money, but with interest rates at or close to record lows today, you can easily outlive your money if that's your philosophy.
Let me ask you this, Mike. If you're of an age between 30 and 40, what's your biggest asset?
Your house.
No.
No?
Your biggest asset is your earning power,
okay.
Your career.
Right.
You need to be
now
paying attention to maximize. Yeah, it's a little late, isn't it? You need to be paying attention to maximizing the career aspects of your life in addition to the investment side, and not enough people pay attention to that.
Yeah, most people are focusing on how should I be invested, but as we have said, the two key things that everybody can control pretty much are save more than you spend and maximize your career. Not killing yourself by working
right.
12 hours a day, I don't mean that, but you know, developing skills so that you become more and more valuable to whomever you're working for.
Job security is your skill set.
It really is.
At what point in life should you shift your focus from accumulation in your investment portfolio to preservation?
Well, you should always be focused on preservation. As Warren Buffett has always said, the first rule is to not lose money, and the second rule is to obey the first rule. So preservation is always paramount. You want to... Or as Will Rogers used to say, I don't care so much about a return on my money as I do about a return of my money.
Well,
and that's true.
Yeah, it
he's still funny. You know that Will Rogers funny. Is still funny. Right.
It's always important to pay attention to the downside and the preservation. But I think the more direct answer to your question is the rules change when the paycheck stops. And you're now living off the nest egg, mm-hmm. and there's not a paycheck coming in. I don't think you need to stop investing for growth at that point in time at all. But investing for distributions can be a little bit different than investing for accumulation. Managing risk becomes more important when the paycheck stops. And now you've got to create a paycheck from the asset
base. And how do you
base.
Do that if you're an average person and don't have somebody at you like you at your disposal? How do you do that? If your money has always been in a 401k, that's where it's all gone, and you haven't had much left over to invest it yourself, how do you do that?
Well, there's a great classic book that Larry and I both read called The Intelligent Investor by Benjamin Graham. It's a small book, and it's free at the library. I've written a book myself, not to try to sell a book, but called Double Your Money in America's Finest Companies, but both of those, and there are others, but go into just the basics of exactly what you're asking. And The Intelligent Investor was written as a lay guide, and it's available free at the library.
I think one of the things you have to do at that point is decide whether you're a do-it-yourselfer, whether you want to work with somebody, or whether you want to delegate the management of the money to someone else. And I think people are wired different ways for that. You know, you can do it yourself. It can take some time. I think you need to be willing to invest some time in it to do it yourself. So you got to decide how you want to spend your time in retirement. It's not like it's a right answer and a wrong answer. It's making logical, well-thought-out decisions about how you're going to approach this.
How do you feel about annuities? Should they be part of a portfolio for retirement?
I'll say two things, depending on what type of annuity you're talking about. I think they can be. One, I think the variable annuities that are being sold today have extremely high expense ratios. They'll put riders on them. You can end up with 3.5% expenses, and it's just a ridiculous number. So we're not big advocates of that. If you look at fixed annuities, which is you get a set return, they're going to pay you a monthly check for the rest of your life. That monthly return they're going to pay you is based on interest rates. So I would be reluctant to lock that in at this point in time just because you're locking in at historically very low interest rates. If interest rates move up some, I think they become a better alternative and can be more on the table as a discussion. I also think, Mike, you look at your Social Security as a fixed annuity. They're going to pay you a fixed amount of money right. for the rest of your life. So most people already have some fixed
Should
annuity
Should you
money.
Wait till you're, what is it, 66, 67, 66. Whatever it is. Should you wait so that you get the whole check? Or should you, if you want to retire early, should you? And if you do retire early and you have some investment savings, should you wait to take Social Security to 67 or take it at 62 or 63 thinking that, well, I may not live that long, so I might as well get the money. I'll get less now, but I'll get more over time.
For most people, the right answer is to wait till 70 if they can. But if they can, if they've got other income and other assets.
Well, aren't you leaving money on the table?
No, because the amount that they will pay you increases each year from 66 to 70.
8% a year.
And here's the way you need to look at Social Security. If I wait to 70 to claim, then my spouse and I are going to receive that higher number for as long as either one of us lives. Mm-hmm. Because at the first death, the survivor steps up to the higher amount. Mm-hmm. And everybody has enough money if they die soon. Your risk is you live too long. So by locking into a higher number from Social Security, you lock in, you reduce your risk of living too long mm-hmm. by being locked into that higher number. I've dealt with a lot of people that think in terms of they want it as quickly as possible. But from a financial perspective, it's not the right answer. The one thing I'll add is all those numbers are easy to run. Advisors can help you with running those Social Security numbers.
It yourself.
And it's, right. It's easier to deal with when you've got it in black and white
and
on paper.
And you can go online and get your Social Security earnings anytime you want.
You can,
Jorge on Facebook says, please ask your guest about rebalancing. How do you safely and effectively bring down the risk in the portfolio as you age?
Well, again, we both have stressed this. The biggest risk most Americans face is outliving their money. So if you continue to rebalance into things that won't grow and getting out of things that have the potential to grow, you could be doing yourself a great disservice. And we have plenty of older clients in their mid to late 80s and one who's 93. We have shifted basically for them, Mike, into higher income producing stocks like AT&T, which won't grow as much, but still they have a very heavy exposure to equities, and those portfolios over time should continue to grow. And a lot of people don't think about – they only think about their time horizon. What about the survivors?
If you have enough money, you're investing this money for your children.
And your grandchildren.
And your grandchildren.
Your grandkids, yeah.
Very quickly, we have less than a minute. Dennis emails, many of my senior-age friends moan about the taxes they have to pay on non-Roth IRA and 401k disbursements, and some are learning about the MDR. Can your guests calm them down by explaining how this works? I have 30 seconds.
Well, the minimum distribution is dictated
by the law.
You have no choice on that. This is money you've never paid taxes on before, so it's kind of the old pay me now or pay me later thing. Mm-hmm. It still works. It's not an excuse not to do an IRA.
Okay. That's Larry Carroll, President, CEO of Carroll Financial Associates. Bill Staton also with us, Chairman of Staton Financial Advisors. Where were you when I needed you?
All right. We're still here.
Thank you for being here. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.